This episode is brought to you by HP Instant Ink. No one is reading your mind, but HP Instant Ink knows when your printer is running low and sends new cartridges before you run out. So you never have to think about ink. For details, visit hp.com/instantinkspotify. Conditions apply. This episode is brought to you by PayPal. These days, choices are everywhere. Like, for instance, the milk in your coffee. Would you like it from a cow? A nut? A tree? Everyone wants options. And now your customers have a new option in the way they pay. With PayPal in person. Just generate your unique QR code in the PayPal app for them to scan. And start accepting PayPal in person today. Learn more at paypal.com/US/getQR code.
Welcome to episode 126 of the Washed Up Emo podcast. I am Tom Mullen from washedupemo.com. Today, welcome Matt Pond. Late last year, Matt Pond PA played its last show after almost 20 years of music. I'd always loved Matt Pond PA and wanted to find out more about him, his life, and where he sees the next phase of his music. Right now, the PA is gone, but the music continues. You can learn more at indreams.space. That's indreams.space. I want to thank everybody out there for your patience with the episodes, or emailing you back, or generally just being around. Personally, my life has been a little crazier with more travel, more work, and even more podcasts. I'm helping out podcasting for my day job, so it's been fun, but I've had to sacrifice Washed Up Emo a little bit. So I hope you don't mind. To note, I live in New York City, and the rent requires me to have a job. So by all means, if you want to support my Patreon, I will quit tomorrow and do this full time. You just got to make the same amount that I make at the day job. So let me know. Until then, we'll continue on. This is episode 126 of the Washed Up Emo podcast with Matt Pond.
Struck brightly by the winter. Snow falls in silent. I can only hear the breathing. We follow sudden deep tracks. The people all stay hidden. The cars rest under snowdrifts. The people we have become, still lay awake, hoping to hear their ways. Snow day, snow day, snow day, snow day.
I just bought a bike for the first time.
Yeah, we talked about this. What kind of bike did you get?
I don't want to say.
Why?
It was online. It's like Craigslist. It was like whatever. It was some Raleigh bike.
It's a beater bike.
It's not. It's a $400 bike.
Okay.
So it's a step, like a millisecond above a beater bike. It's something. I got rid of my van, and it's the first time in 20 years that I haven't had a white van parked outside where I live.
Really?
So, yeah.
Where do you live?
I live in Kingston.
Ah.
Yeah. So, it's pretty crazy.
So now you're biking around Kingston?
Not right now. I don't know if you've noticed the winter.
Have you heard about windproof clothing?
Have you heard about road bikes that don't really go through ice so hot? I'm not getting a mountain bike.
I did bike in ice in the city. It's insane.
Yeah. I don't mind a little bit, but like,
yeah.
You know.
When it's covered, you can't do anything.
Yeah, no.
No.
I was listening to the Artie episode you did. That's great. George, who's a co-owner of St. Vitus, played in our band for a little while.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Ah.
Yeah.
You had a long history for your band.
Of music.
You mean?
Yeah.
You, music, you. Like,
yeah.
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 Was it 20 years? Wait, no, longer. No, 20,
it's
right?
It's 20 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wanted to. It was good to stop on at an even time, or stop doing that part.
So what? Philadelphia, right, was where it started.
Yeah, but you're from New Hampshire, right?
Vermont. Never make that mistake.
Wow. Wow. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to offend you. Where in Vermont are you from?
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Outside of Burlington, a little town called Jericho.
Oh, I don't know it.
On the way to Stowe. If you're driving to Stowe, you pass where I grew up.
I mean, I lived on the border. Norwich was across the river from me.
Yeah.
All my friends were in Burlington. So I drove past you or something.
When did you hang out in Burlington?
A long time ago.
Like, what was it, bands and stuff?
No. It was out of high school, before this baloney. I love it up there.
Did you go up there for shows, or were you hanging out just in general?
I was just hanging out. All this music stuff and shows and everything just fell together. It was never a scene, or I never knew anyone this way. I'm too shy to go to shows, really, until music hit me in the side of the head.
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no. So what were you doing up? Did you happen to go to the Pure Pop Records? Did you happen to go to that record store?
No.
I would have brought you there if we knew each other. Are we around the same age?
We're not. Let's not talk years.
I'll figure it out by the
end. Yeah.
I'll figure it out.
No,
based
no,
on
no,
what bands you reference, I'll figure it out.
I don't. All right. Vermont.
No, there's a huge rivalry. Trust me.
Hanover's pretty conservative, so there wasn't a lot of you had to really search.
How did you find out about music?
When I was really young, I asked my mom to get me the single of John Waite, Missing You.
Really?
And she got me Swordfish Trombones by mistake, by Tom Waits. And the Beatles just kind of blew the doors off my life, you know? So then I started just seeking things out on my own, just trying to listen as much as possible.
How were you getting it? Was it friends? Was it mixtapes?
Just buying tapes that I liked the covers of. I mean, we moved around so much, having a friend was an exotic idea.
Really?
Yeah.
Why were you guys moving around so much?
My parents loved, getting married and divorced. So both were married and divorced three times.
Wow. Both parents.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
So it was a lot of,
were
new
you
places.
At different people? Like, were you at your dad's house and then your mom's house?
No, I grew up with my mom mostly.
I grew up with mom.
So, it was fine. It just was, you know, it actually helps focusing on music, not having a lot of friends. So
you would be in did that start in grade school, where you'd be in school for a couple of years and then move and then have to start over?
Yeah. I mean, we moved all over the place in New Hampshire, so it was interesting.
So you would know about the Shrine Bowl then, right? Quick aside, really?
No.
Oh, man.
What's the Shrine Bowl?
Shrine Bowl is like the best players from Vermont and New Hampshire play a football game.
I don't know this.
It was a big deal.
We played Vermont in Little League once. We won.
What was your position?
I was third base.
Third base?
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah, it was cool. I was
hot corner. Come on.
Yeah, I loved it. And then it was funny because in the Artie podcast, he's like, then high school hit, and it was the same thing for me. I was amazing. I could hit anything. I could catch anything, and then I could not.
Yeah, once Babe Ruth hit, I couldn't do that. Like, I was like,
oh, yeah, no, yeah, that was the same thing.
And I was into music at that time more, so I was like, I'm good.
So, you were a skier then too, probably?
No. It was funny, a friend just posted a photo from the town I was born in, and it showed a basketball hoop with about 3 feet of snow. And it brought me back to, if it snowed, I would shovel the driveway to play basketball.
Oh, that's
but
cool.
Also, skiing was expensive.
Yeah, it's wicked expensive.
So my parents were both teachers. Thanks for saying wicked, by the way. That makes me I encourage that.
We're in the zone. It's probably the wrong zone.
No, but like I remember growing up and being like, wow, that's like expensive to go ski but you could like whatever. There was like a locals day or the smaller hill, but like going to Stowe or one of those fancy places, like nope. But cross country skied.
Yeah.
It's like the poor man skiing.
Yeah. I downhill skied for a little while, and we didn't have any money, so I was made fun of by Massachusetts kids all the time.
Oh, because of what you wore?
Because of my skis and what I wore.
I wore jeans, but I would just wear long johns, and I'm like, I'm fine. And then kids would be like, where's your snow pants? I'm like, I have jeans on. I'm fine.
Yeah. No. You couldn't wear jeans. No
or
jeans.
Or slacks. I'd be like, or corduroys. I'd be like, I'm fine.
Cords would work.
Cords would work. That's cool. I think I think that area, especially the New England part, like it was close enough where you were exposed to other things. I just think it was slower back then. Obviously, you know, there wasn't the internet. There wasn't, you know, it was just I always felt being that far, so far north, you got things like a year later than when they were like happening.
Yeah, the first kind of whispering around of music that I heard that I started getting from friends was, which was, you know, larger than just finding music on my own, was Dinosaur Jr. So that was like my next like eye opening.
How did that happen? Like, how did you find that?
Just someone lent me a tape, you know.
What about it? Like hooked.
I mean, it's like it was like Neil Young, but heavier and you know, and I love Neil Young, but it just had a lot of energy and it felt raw and those were the things that I wanted to do musically. I mean, and I wrote songs for myself and never showed them to anyone.
Really?
So, oh yeah.
How come?
Because they were bad.
But you didn't want to share it with anybody?
No. I mean, maybe if I was drinking and there was a girl around, you know, which is even worse.
That's worse. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the worst. But
when did you start writing?
I mean, probably in high school, but never showed anybody. And then,
so not even like a talent show thing? Or
no. No. No.
So there's some girls out there that have heard your early material and that's it.
Yeah. And they don't talk to me anymore, but that's cool.
I'm just kidding. Only Susan. Yeah. She's great.
No, it's over time there have been girls from high school that have come to see me play later in life, and that is a strange thing. My
really?
First crush. Yes.
Your first crush came to a show?
Yeah, we're friends now.
I love that.
Yeah.
Actually, my first girlfriend ever is my lawyer.
That's cool.
And she lives in New York.
That's very cool.
I hang out with her husband, actually them, all the time. Yeah. But it's weird. Like, she loves introducing us because she'll introduce her husband. This is my husband, Matt. And then she's like, this is my first boyfriend, Tommy. And they like, you can see him kind of like, what? They just did that? So she came to the show?
She's come to a few. It was cool. I think we drank tequila and kissed as adults, and so that's pretty strange. You know, that's as far as it went, which is probably for the best, but it is strange to, over time and space.
I like that.
On stage, yeah.
So then when did you start showing people? Was it in school? Did you go to college?
I went to Bard for a little while. Didn't graduate like most people that go to Bard. Then moved to Philly because it was so cheap, and then just started playing music a little bit, and then realized that unless I named something after myself, I would have to always be putting up with other people's opinions. Which I don't mind opinions, but I like a dictatorship a little bit.
Yeah. When did you kind of say, I'm going to do this?
It was
when
pretty
you
much
Bard?
No, I mean, I still don't think that I'm doing this. I you know,
really?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't feel it
even after this long.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think when we, you know, when things were at their, you know, when we were selling our most records or whatever, I still didn't kind of have any recognition of what was happening. I still was just as focused on, you know, I've got this song in my head. I've got to figure out how to get it out. So it's never been, I've never kind of looked at it as a thing, as a, that's pretty articulate, as a career or something I'm actually doing. I mean, it just seems so nebulous.
When you moved to Philly, what were you doing for work? Or you?
Nothing. I moved to Philly with two garbage bags. I just kind of was floating. And I moved furniture. I was good at it. My nickname was Struggles the Twig, but I was strong. I just worked with a lot of Russians. They made fun of me. I mean, I don't know. Yeah.
So what else happened in Philly when you were, was it finding people to play with? Was it writing more songs?
What do you mean?
Like the early days, like those first few.
I mean, the good thing about Philly was it was so cheap. The bad thing about Philly is that it has kind of a Rocky mentality, which they can't have anymore.
Yeah, they can't.
They can't have a Rocky man. They won. They're winners. There's no underdogs anymore. But it's a big city with kind of a small town feel to it, which is good in some ways for having a scene and for being supportive on a smaller level. I mean, there's amazing music from Philadelphia that people have never heard. You know. So it was a good place to be when it was kind of a nearly bankrupt city and everyone was just playing music for the sake of playing music.
So for you, when did you start? Like, again, like, was it, you had to play out, right, at some point?
Yeah. I didn't think about it at first. You know, and I'm still nervous to play a show. I still, you know, feel the, you know, I don't want to play badly. Playing well is, so it was, but I don't remember that. I just made a lot of jokes and started just playing in front of people. And I can't really remember.
It happens.
Maybe I blocked it out.
Yeah, it happens a lot. Were you more comfortable in the studio or recording a song?
Let me think about this. I am comfortable, but they're all these places, you know, being in front of a microphone, even right now, it just is, it's a place of focus. I'm just so into it. When I'm doing it, that I can't think about anything else. And, mm-hmm. and it, which is good, but I think it's alienating too. It's, you know, to other people, you know, I wish I could have be less, caught up in it. I wish I could take it less seriously, which I do now, but it took a long, long time.
So yeah. Just the constant focus and serious meaning, that was it, and kind of things fell to the wayside otherwise?
Yeah, I mean, each show is like life or death. Getting this vocal down the right way is life or death. You know, I love recording and working with Chris, who we're still working together, Chris Hansen.
Chris Hansen, yeah.
Because he's the only person that understands when I'm cursing into a microphone. I'm only cursing at myself. But that's how it works for me. I don't know. Do you sing?
Yeah. Yeah, I had an early career, and I kind of chose to do industry versus music.
What was your band called?
In college, it was called Twisted Kites. Come on, okay. That's pretty emo. And then Halifax Code in New York, which one of the guys ended up doing Robbers on High Street.
Oh, cool.
Remember that band? Ben yeah. Trentroken? I was in a band with Ben when I first moved to the city.
Oh, that's really cool.
So did that with him. And then I did a solo career called Turn the Knife. I used to play with Kevin Devine and Adam Rubinstein.
Oh, sweet.
Jared Gorbel, the guy from Honorary Title, who I just saw, who's in the band called The Mourners. Kind of funny how those little people you meet along the way, you continuously see or in other iterations. So, but it was fun. But singing was, I loved it. I would play, you know, restaurants, and I played all over.
Really?
Yeah. I'd play all over the East Village.
Do you write music still?
Rarely. I actually took out my guitar last night and started playing. I actually wrote a little song like last night, but I barely do it now.
That's cool though.
Yeah. Like it was funny the decision I had to make. I was at a job and someone was ready to sign the band I was in. And I decided to do the industry side because I didn't want the unknown of music. Like the profession of doing it, I felt like I could be in the profession and do it. I didn't want to be like the music part of it.
I get that. I did the same. I got the job to be the music supervisor at Urban Outfitters.
When was this?
Early 2000s. And I was like, no, I got to do this music thing. And I don't know if I made the right choice.
You never know.
The guy who got the job was a friend of mine. And now, yeah, he's doing well. He's a good guy.
Does he still work at Urban?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's funny. The book got into Urban Outfitters, which was nice. They bought some. But
that's
it was,
cool.
I think they either, I forget how they found out about it, but I think they were, you know, new of it, which was nice. So it wasn't, but it's always nice to sell a few more.
Sure. I still know a bunch of great people from there. So, you know, it's changed a lot, right? Probably a couple years after that, then it was, it turned into McDonald's or whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's, which, you know, it's huge.
Yeah, it's huge. That's funny about the music or the gig.
Yeah.
I feel like those happen though.
What do you mean?
Are you still beating yourself up about it?
Well, they were offering me time off. It was really good money. They were like, you can still play music. It's like, no, got it. I'm an artist.
You were pretty serious about it.
That was a time when I could write songs. I mean, there was a time where I could just write songs in my head the whole way through. And then play it out later. And so I felt like that was, I couldn't lose that little trick.
Yeah.
But it was kind of like a circus trick.
Were you doing odd jobs at that point and doing music full time? Like, were there other...
I was writing,
that you were trying to pursue?
I was writing music for my friend who worked at Oxygen. It wasn't good music. We intentionally wrote it badly, and that's what they liked the best. So that was strange. But it made money, so I thought, why not just keep doing that? But, you know, writing music for other people dries up pretty quickly. But then things started to take off and I moved to New York. So, which was good. New York is a town where people appreciate ambition. And it was, I guess I'm not ambitious, but I just, you know,
you were making something.
I like songwriting and I like being around people who are, making things, and not feeling bad about it or looking down at it or trying to hide it or, you know, and that happens in a lot of places. So here is not, you know.
What year was that? Do you remember?
When did I move to New York? 2003, 2004.
Yeah, I was here. I moved in 2000.
Yeah.
So it's like a few years out. It was still kicking. Brooklyn hadn't. The L train still was kind of shitty after the second stop.
Yeah, it was. I moved to. I lived off the Graham stop in a place called Williamsburg.
That was early days.
Yeah. I didn't. It wasn't a thing. People would mention it as it was a place to be and a thing. And I was, it seemed like a dirty place where there weren't many people.
Yeah.
So if it was a thing, that was fine. But it was a place where, did you ever go to Daddy's Bar?
No.
So the Rogers Sisters, which was a band back in the day, they owned it. I think they sold, I don't know, but it was a place where, you know, people from Rat-A-Tat, people from all sorts of bands would just be there and they'd just be themselves. And these were bands that I loved and bands that I liked. And so it was kind of exciting to be in and around that. It was a really great time.
Yeah. I felt that energy. Like you go out there and there would be that show. And then it was this, people hadn't found out about it yet.
Yeah, I mean, it just...
Yes, yes, there were people at the show, but you still felt you were in on something, and it felt comfortable.
It made me work more. It
Seeing
made me
those
write
other bands.
More. Yeah. It made... I felt like, you know, how much time I put into it really mattered, and how much quality time, and I love that. I mean, I had the smallest room in New York City, which I then packed all of our gear into. There was a tiny path to my bed, and that's all there was. It was stacked to the ceiling, everything I owned.
Wow.
Yeah.
All the music equipment and stuff?
Yep.
What were you doing in New York? Was it music full time?
It was music full time then. I mean, that's when, you know... Like, we had a song on the OC, and then another song on the OC.
Which one was on the OC?
New Hampshire.
Oh, right.
And I had watched the OC as a casual watcher, just as, you know, a ridiculous thing to watch.
Yeah.
Because it was on television, and so it was strange. That's when I stopped watching it, because it makes me uncomfortable to see... To either see myself or hear myself.
Still?
Yeah.
Why?
I don't think I ever did this to be famous, and I never thought about being famous. I mean, I have since, but it was never like the goal. The goal was just to communicate. And, because sometimes my words, see, sometimes my words fail, can't even say it. Sometimes my words fail me. Mm-hmm. And this was a way where it could be kind of orchestrated. So I leaned heavily on that. But when you see yourself or when you are in those, I don't know, it's too much of myself.
It kind of like fills you up when you want to feel, I don't know, that it's, you want to be more humble. Like it feels like it.
I mean, I can be, I don't have to be humble. It's like hearing your voice recorded. I mean, at this point you're probably used to it.
Yeah. Just a little bit.
I'm not used to it. And really? I mean, I don't mind singing. But this whole
talking thing,
and then, you know, just, you know, communicating off the top of my head is not my favorite thing. I get too caught up in a syllable or
more of a planner.
I'm a planner.
I am too. I feel like that. I have my notes. I've got, you know, I can't just go into a meeting and have it all in my head. I have to have everything and what might happen. And here's my notes for this and reminding myself. But I think for music, like it's kind of, I think like that, like you're planning your music. I think of sometimes.
I mean, yeah, the whole, each album is a concept that's only, you know, conceptual to me before, while making it, and then even after a lot of the time. But I'm okay with that, you know. If someone wants to uncover it, they can find it. But yeah, and which leads me to, you know, I don't think my game was ever tight just because I couldn't be sharp enough to make a girl laugh in a bar. There was recently a thing about Union Pool, how it was like,
oh,
this.
Oh God, was that New York Times, right?
I can't remember where
it was.
But it was,
yeah, talking about how it was like a place to do.
And it was, you know, a jog away from my house, but it was always a stuttering, stammering place of failure for me, which is cool. You know, I hung out with friends, and then badly flirted, but it was that place. Like everyone knew it back then. Everyone would say, let's go here to do this.
What do you remember about those early 2000s in Williamsburg and those bands? And just, I mean, I was a fun time to kind of feel something happening that people were taking notice of.
It was fun. It really did feel electric. It did feel, you know, the whole city to me felt like there was possibility. And so, I mean, we just stayed up all night long all the time. Shows music wise, I mean, you know, I'm just particular and peculiar about what I like and what really gets to me. I like going to shows, but unless it's something that's just completely moving to me, it's hard to totally stay focused. And especially now, you know,
yeah.
It's hard to stand behind someone with a cell phone, just taking a video of a show. I mean, it was always hard for me before because people were always spilling. I'm the person that you spill your beer on at a show. So, you know, if you're looking for that person.
What were some bands that you liked back then?
Like in general or from New York? I mean,
from New York and in general.
I mean, LCD Sound System, as I don't want to know them as people. I know of them and I try to ignore stories, but I think that they're a beautiful band making beautiful music that is, you know, poignant in a Morrissey-esque type of way.
Mm-hmm.
Which I would never say to them in person, but because then they'd laugh at me. But it's true. It really moves me. I mean, Rat-A-Tat, they're friends of friends. Without lyrics, I think that they're still making great music. I mean, but then, you know. And then I listen to Blur, you know, and then I listen to Pulp and, it's hard to think. I think I just tried to overhear or be around people that were making things, whether it was music or whether it was just, you know, I mean, back then artists could afford to live in the city.
Yeah.
So it was,
there You're was just kind of taking it all in.
Yeah. I mean, I, again, shows for me can get awkward unless it's my favorite thing of all time.
So the whole schmooze thing and hanging out and
I'm terrible at it. You know, even at my own shows.
Yeah.
I want to play well and I don't want to get, and I get lost if I'm talking to too many people. I don't know.
I mean, it's overwhelming.
Yeah, I get easily overwhelmed.
Yeah. But I think for the music part that you've made a lot of music.
I mean, that's the part
that's great.
Yeah. I mean, I love it. I always feel like, you know, once I'm done with an album, I can see it for what it isn't. And then I want to move on with all the music that I've made, you know, since the beginning and under my name. I think whether or not I did it, I did it as perfectly as I could do it, but I said everything I needed to say from that voice.
And then you move on, right?
And then you move on. And then you know, it's good to know when to say enough, I think. I mean, I definitely, after a few kind of dust ups with some people, wanted to take everything into my own hands, do every part of it, to know that whole thing. So it was almost like I ended where I started, and I wanted to do that. Because when I started, I think I took things for granted. You know, people bought records when I started, and people, you know, just went to shows for the sake of going to shows. I don't think that that's true anymore. I mean, even I did. And now people want to go to festivals, which is fine, but it's not the same thing. It's not, you know, a focused community-based experience. I wanted to finish that way, and I wanted to do it, yeah, with in complete control. But yeah, I'm trying to find a new voice now, which is one of the hardest things I've ever done. I like the searching part, but it is kind of like, it's like being like in an isolation tank. Like, I have no idea, you know, but I like it. I mean, if I do it, if I do it in a way that I like, I'm going to be excited. If I don't, I just die. But in either way, I probably just die. But
but you're trying it.
Yeah, it's very different. There's not, you know, the whole world of music is different. I don't know if you know that.
Yes.
I mean, geez, we had someone asking us about record sales this year, and I'm like, I think that's almost irrelevant, except for heavy hitters or top players. I don't think anyone really sells that many records. It's fun to sell records, but it's not a gauge or a way of looking at things, or it's becoming less and less relevant to making music.
Mm-hmm. I feel like there's a lot more work that I've mentioned this a lot, but it's like that you had an email on your CD, if that. You might have had just an address, and then it kind of moved into where it was a MySpace thing or a Pure Volume, and you start kind of adding these things you have to do, and now everything is so splintered that some of your fans are just on Snapchat. Some of them are only on Instagram, but then maybe they do Twitter, and it's like it's somehow you're trying to give a message, and each of those things have a different way of doing things. Your email is different. Some people only do email, and you're almost – it just seems like it's a lot more than just putting music down and, you know, throwing it up on Bandcamp. There's like more to do to remind people and to get people to pay attention.
In a certain sense, I think that that's true, but I think that I don't know. I don't think people are even paying attention to the things to even the social media memes or the emails or anything. I don't know what it is now. Maybe it's going back to people are going to start searching again, but I feel like it's just become so
Just the noise?
It's just a lot of noise, yeah.
And so, time. I feel like maybe just because maybe I'm in the industry and I have records and I'm constantly inundated with emails from more music, but I don't know. I want to have more time with something, and maybe someone younger thinks about it a different way. But if you send me a link to your music, it's different than as if you sent me something with it or a piece of it that I could hold and sit with. And I know that's over, but I feel like I can connect to it better if I could see a photo or a artwork or something. And now, if someone asks me what I'm listening to, I'm looking at my iTunes and squinting, or Spotify. I don't remember. But if you asked me before, I could rattle off a bunch. So for some reason, like, it's almost like it's noisy in my brain when someone's asking me what I'm listening to.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's what I have. I can't recall. I do have to focus on one person or one album, and I try to do that now, like force myself, even though it's a stream or someone sent me something. And like, I have this rule where it's like, if it's important to listen to, I have to listen to it twice on separate days. And then if it's something I love, I'll just go back to it because I go back to it. But yeah,
I'll buy vinyl. If I love the record, I'll get it on vinyl, 'cause then I know that I could sit through it.
I've lost too much vinyl in bad breakups to have like five full collections to really get back into it fully.
I've pared my stuff down. I give away a lot. I guess I'm only gonna buy something if I'm gonna listen to it. I don't just buy the third pressing because it's blue and I had. It's like, am I gonna listen to it? Great, I want it. Do you buy records or you've had so many breakups that you've lost it all?
I mean, if I love something, but I mean, I've accepted streaming. You know, I feel like maybe some people will curse me to hell for saying that, but you know, the truth is if it is going to be, it is happening. It's happened. To fight it is kind of pointless.
Yeah.
And the more that it's accepted and advocated for, then maybe it'll be the way that people actually start making money again. So I'm not against it. I was initially. I mean, there's no person that, you know, it's hard to just think of, you know, it's not worth anything anymore, but this is the way of making it worth something.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't mind Spotify. I don't know.
I mean, there's more people listening to music than ever.
Yeah. I wish that they were taking it in as I wish the only thing I wish, if I had all my wishes, was the album. Like I miss albums and I miss people listening to albums. But, you know, people liked singles before and it went in waves, and people liked albums and then people like singles and people like albums.
It's a wave.
You know.
I just think it's scary that the playlisting part is such a huge deal with how someone will hear you. And it's, you think that there's not a gatekeeper, you can listen to anything. No, there are people that's their job to put these playlists together, and they're populated. So that, and it's an algorithm. And that's somehow the only way.
But there were DJs.
That's what I'm saying. It's back again. Like, but that,
I kind of don't mind the, you know, someone advocating for something small will make something small appear to everyone. So it's not perfect. You know, I don't know where the music supervisors and, you know, who's paying them or how it all works, but it is, you know, it is just a part of it. I don't know.
I just hope people, the whole search part where there was whatever was on, I always felt whatever was on the radio, I knew there was more. And I knew that there was a way to find it. And that was always a feeling. So I hope that that continues, that just because that one playlist popped up on your browse, that I hope that you dig a little deeper and find more instead of being force-fed.
But you can a little bit with this stuff. It allows for a search. So, you know,
that's what I mean. I hope more people do that.
I think that people will. I'm not the most optimistic person about humanity every single second of life, but I think that people, I do think that the inundation of social media and the advertising and the desire to get attention is pushing people into their own. I mean, I've never been a social media person, and maybe that's part of my, you know, whatever. Like I'm just not going to spend. So you tweeted at me yesterday and I don't see it for like 20 hours. I'm just not, I guess I should have my notifications on or
I don't,
but I, if I get sucked into that, then I'm not doing something else. And I can't jump in and out so easily. It's like, you know, I try to as fast as possible, but in a kind of a hurried way where it's, you know, like I'm, you know.
Well, no, it's kind of like, I mean, at like a job, I forget what the stat is. Someone will know that's listening. There's like a stat, like if you're doing something and you're in the middle of something and someone comes by and asks you something separate and you have to go back, it takes a certain amount of time to like get back in. And there's like that, I think that same thing with social media. Like you were doing something, you need a little hit, so you do it instead of doing that thing. It just, it there's no, like the focus part, I feel like is hard.
I mean, it's hard for me. It's hard just to sit down and try to write for the sake of writing enough before all this baloney. And now, I don't know. Sometimes it seems natural, but most of the time it's a little bit like, and then there are just people that are there, that are always there. You can see them always there. And I just can't do that. I mean, and some people do it well.
We were talking before we started about the, you know, the bands, and you're like, I don't know why I'm on, Tom. I'm not emo. But I think a lot of bands referenced you. I heard your name a lot when I was listening to music. If it was when I was in college, if I got the record from Sunday Service from Polyvinyl, or, you know, those kind of the years. Did you meet a lot of those bands from those eras and play shows? I feel like you were on a bunch of those.
You know, a little bit. I was shy. I think everybody was kind of, everyone was focused. You know, I don't want to say anything. I neither want to insult myself. I don't think I've always been great, especially in the beginning, trying to figure things out as a person. I don't think everyone else has always been great. There is weird, as much as there was a scene, there's weird competition between bands. Sometimes it feels like a talent show. I don't hold it against anyone.
I know what you mean. There's only so many slots.
Yeah. Or I don't think that that's true. I think that that's the way. Now,
or like the pop, like the where what people are thinking. Like, I want to be that popular where you're this, the X of this genre kind of thing.
I don't care how popular I am, but I always cared about being treated like having good sound or not being treated badly. So, which most venues and like to do. So that's where I was a little bit feisty.
Were there bands that you liked from maybe the late 90s or 2000s that from that world?
Sunny Day Real Estate, in this realm of music that
like punk, you know, the hard, like if it was, you know, post hardcore emo.
It was Sunny Day Real Estate that I, and still to this point, I love Jeremy Enoch's new album.
That's a great record.
I would actually be nervous to meet him, which is weird. I'm nervous to meet like heroes.
Yeah.
But I think he's a great musician and great songwriter. And I like the way that he seems distant and doesn't kind of play the game and does it and still is doing it, you know? So that would be the arc.
Yeah.
I just have to write better songs.
Did you feel that you were associated with it by accident? And because I feel like there were it's more of just like you were mentioned in that list of bands, and it was kind of and I liked how it was more indie because I had other friends that liked indie rock, and you know, it was like a bridge band almost.
I mean, it worked on the Polyvinyl samplers. I would listen to the whole thing and be like, we have our place on here. Was I a huge fan of the other bands? You know, not huge. I respected them, but you know, it made sense. It didn't. That isn't a part that bothered me. I mean, I still like the people at Polyvinyl. I still think that they're doing a great job.
They helped with the book, by the way.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, they did fulfillment. I shipped them the books, and they did all the fulfillment because I told Matt, I said, I don't have any room for these books in my apartment.
Oh, that's cool. There's plenty of room in Champagne.
There's plenty of room in Champagne.
Yeah.
But kind of in his whole mantra when he was on the podcast is like, do right for the band.
I probably should have kept putting records out with Polyvinyl because they were, it was pretty straight up. And I made a few errors. But then again, I don't mind any of the errors I've made because out of errors, I finished records on my own. You know, with struggling, I was always like, you know, I would always find songs. So it never, in the things that didn't go exactly the way that I wanted them to, they got better. I don't mean to sound like a hippie, but you know, it all makes sense, you know.
Do you have any favorites from your discography?
Oh, like, I don't like to think about it.
I love that. I love talking to you because you can't stand to look back.
I mean, I just want to move forward. You know, the point is
you're like all the people I have to work with, which is great. But it's like what about if someone, like, is it hard for you to play older songs at a show?
Not with the right people. You know, there's a large group of people that I'll play with, and if they're into it, and if you get the right band cooking, and you're on tour, then it's great, you know. I mean, it all depends. Songs come to life in different ways and mean different things all the time. And the problem is like, you know, if I'm going to play the song, I have to mean it. You know, and I'm not this serious about everything. I mean, I don't mind if people take the piss out of me constantly, but when I'm doing it, then I can't, it's not, you know, then it's not funny anymore.
Yeah.
Cause I want to do it. You know, you're playing a show. This is, you know, someone paid some money. Not everyone snuck in or faked a hand stamp, you know, they came for something.
And, yeah.
And I'm, you know, and even if someone's just streaming an album, if someone's going to take the time to listen to something, you know, we put it in there, you know? So, I mean, I like stuff I've done, but it doesn't, like, I can't use that to inform anything that I'm going to do, except not to do that.
So it's still always doing something new.
It's just a search. I mean, life is a search. It's like a, you know.
No, I like that. It's like the, I get really bored with a job and I have to do something else, or I have to add something else to it, or I need to do something again, or can't do the same thing every day.
Yeah. I mean, and, you know.
Other than this podcast for 7 years.
I mean, I was listening today. I loved it. I loved, I, you know, you're good at this.
Oh, thank you. I had no training.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know where, what podcast school you go to these days, or, but it just was fluid and nice. And, I don't know. I really like the one that stuck me was the Artie stuff. And I really like him. And I don't know.
What I think about that and in you now is like the part about being open. And there's a point where sometimes I'm interviewing people and I can tell that they're just giving me the answer and I have to keep asking. And I'll ask it another time and I'll edit it out. I'll be like, all right, tell me that without, you know, the line. What do you like? And it takes a minute, I think, for some people to. Is instantly, let me tell you how it is.
Yeah.
Which makes for a better hang. Yeah.
Am I doing all this wrong? I'm doing it wrong.
No, I said you're not doing it wrong.
I apologize.
No, I think the years and years of doing this, I still get just as excited when you walk in the door, or if it's Tim Kasher or a band that's brand new, I get just as excited.
He's a nice guy. Back in the day, we played with The Good Life and Azure Ray.
Azure Ray, you're right. About them.
They're playing again a little bit.
Really?
And they're really nice. But, and I've spoken and I've told this story since. Can I tell this?
Of course.
Because this is not to disparage them. This is just the way it is. They were playing, there used to be a place called the Blackbird in Portland, Oregon. And every time we'd play there, people were like, nobody comes here. And I'm like, well, why are we playing here? Run by nice people, great booking agent. It just was a part of Portland, I think, that was harder to get to. And it was always a Monday night. And it's a weird thing to travel all that way across the country to play at midnight on a Monday night to 10 people and still be like, got to do this. But we were the opener. And
for
Azure Ray and The Good Life. And I was really excited about it. I mean, these were two bands I really liked. And they wanted to leave early to drive to Sacramento. And so they made us play last.
Oh.
And unloaded
classic.
While we're like loaded out in front of us while we're playing. And it wasn't cool. But then you realize, and we had to drive to San Francisco. I was like, but we have to drive too, guys.
Yeah.
And, but it wasn't, they played great. It was a great show. And I've told them, I told, Arenda Fink that story. And I told Tim last year, we played it with him at a record store, just playing kind of acoustic. And there's no hard feelings. It was a bummer at the time, but like, it just was a bunch of people trying to
make
survive,
it.
You know, and you know, it was what it was. But it is funny to tell people that story to make them feel kind of bad, have a laugh, and then they buy you a beer. It's good. I got my beer.
Yeah. You know? That's a good story.
Yeah. They used to play at the Trocadero, and I used to do lights in Philadelphia. And at that time, we had similar haircuts, and people thought, and similar facial hair, and people in the audience over several shows thought we were the same person, thought I was the singer of Clutch. And
yes,
so
you totally do.
And they
like
were
Fallon a little bit.
And they would ask
not Fallon. I forget his last name now.
And people would poke me in the audience as I was going to do to the light board. They'd be like, "Oh, you got to play that." And I'm like, "What?" And like, there was
you have to nod.
I did. I mean, people thought I was the sound guy also too, and they'd say, "Turn up the bass or the drums," and I would just turn up a light.
That didn't work.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. All of a sudden, they see the strobe light turn on. You drop the PA. Correct?
I don't want to use my name anymore for anything.
That's what it was.
Well, there was a time.
For a little bit, you dropped it for a minute.
We put a record out with BMG and were asked to do that. And I said, it doesn't matter. It is a... But then it mattered to some people, and it was kind of a strange thing. And then we split ways with everyone, and I kind of was like, okay, this is what we're doing, who I am in a certain sense, and so I'm going to take it back. But, you know, from now on, I don't want to be the dude, you know.
More of a team?
I want a cloak. And, yeah, I want to be on a team. And I, you know, maybe other singers, maybe I just bring people water or something. I don't know, you know, adjust the levels.
So still being a part of it, but not being the football.
I love writing songs, but I don't want to be, it put me in a position of having to be a dictator, even though as much as I brought that on myself, it's hard to get people to play and show up, and even when you're paying them, you know. So, you know, when we pull up to a gas pump now, it's like everybody's got to pitch in.
Yeah. Probably feels good.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I'm going to pull up to any more gas pumps, but I mean, I sold my van.
Yeah, you sold your van.
I have a bike.
Well, they do have the air pump at the gas station, so you'll do that.
Yeah. But they usually don't charge. Do they charge?
No.
Okay.
I mean, it might be a quarter.
I can afford that.
Yeah, you can afford
that. Yeah, I can afford a quarter. But, I don't think it wasn't healthy for me to constantly be rounding everything up, you know. And it was, you know, of course, Chris Hansen has done probably as much work as I have, probably more. But in terms of kind of getting it together, getting it done, putting it together, it came down to me. And when anything went wrong, it was, you know, someone has to take the blame.
Yeah. That must feel good.
To take the blame?
No, to have other people with you to help and to be a part of it.
Yeah. I mean, he's always helped. Now he has to take as much as the blame. So, but he's a father now, so...
Does that open up to you to relax more with writing when you know you don't have to think about maybe 10 other things? Now it's 5?
Yeah, I mean, we're trying to co-write more. We did it a little bit. It's, you know, it's writing in a little darkened room by myself is isolating, so it's a little more... exciting, I guess, less kind of dramatic and dark and morbid.
Yeah.
So I like that.
So I want to mention that. So how have you felt, you know, from that change, and has it opened up different things, and what's next? Like, what do you want to do next?
Well, so we're having people send in their thoughts and visions and dreams to the site we put up.
What's the site?
It's called indreams.space. We're totally out of the .com. And, you know, people are slowly doing it. We're doing that. Then we're putting music under their dreams or thoughts or visions or ideas. So the more people that send in things, the more exciting it is. And it's just anything you want to talk about under 5 minutes. And it's kind of creating dialogue in a way where, so the way things are, it seems right now, is everyone's dialogue is focused and pushed, as an agenda every way. And everything I hear, I mean, I love listening to NPR, but it has got its, everyone has an agenda. And so I'm trying to just, I want people just to kind of listen. So then we're doing that. We're going to have a radio show in Kingston, on the community radio station. We're going to play music in between them and then play these kind of dreamy music.
Brad.
And then play... That's not a real genre. It's not like emo. But it it will, I think it'll work. We've done it. We're, you know, we've set our time clock. We have our, we're working on our dreams, and then it'll turn into kind of interviews, but just about really esoteric things. I mean, kind of like what we're doing right now, because there isn't really, I'm not, you know, I'm not, I, you know, I don't have any releases, and I'm not going to be playing out live, or I don't have any shows. At some point, these things will happen, but it's kind of nice to talk outside of those things. This thing that we're doing, I don't know if the band is going to be called In Dreams, but then we're going to put albums together out of some of this stuff and create a larger piece of work that we put our own music in between these things.
I love that.
It's exciting. It's like, I just wrote something yesterday. I've been writing to Chris's music and some small things on my own, and we've been working on instrumental music, but then I wrote something yesterday that just got me excited. So
great.
Yeah. It's not all lost.
I do like that you're looking forward like that. I think the, I don't know. I like that. I like the way that you thought. Like, I feel like the, I don't know. I get a good feeling and vibe that, that someone can enjoy that moment and listen back to it, but know that you're doing something different. And as a fan, that's exciting. I don't want the Winter EP 12 times.
No, and that's what, you know, I did. And there's no, you know, I don't, the music I did, I've done, I like it. You know, even,
I wasn't that you'd say it, you didn't. But
no,
just
no, no,
that,
no, no. But just to be clear, like, I like it, but I can't, you know, I didn't want to, if I didn't do this, I don't think I would continue making anything.
Yeah.
I think I would just kind of start grinding and repeating myself. And I know that I've already repeated myself. I have said trees and eyes and wait and winter in far too many songs. I probably should have a list of words I can't use.
What about, like, what you just, you seem so happy about the new stuff, and that's great.
I'm excited. It's just daunting. There isn't, you know, how do you do something that doesn't have, you know, how do you restart something from scratch in a way?
In a different name, right?
In a different name, in a different way. Music isn't really selling records. I don't know if I'd ever trust a publishing company again in my life.
Do you have everything back?
No. I probably have to go to court. And it's a lot to go to court. I have some back. I have some stuff. I've gotten some stuff back. But, you know, there's some of these places don't care. You know. So, and I don't mind a fight. But fighting is hard, and it kind of, it is distracting to making something, and it's kind of, if we do have souls, it's soul crushing.
Because there's no closure to it.
Yeah. But at some point, there will be a sternly worded letter, and then that, and once you send a sternly worded letter, you have to follow it up.
Yeah.
And it's just, when to send that, you know.
When to hit send.
When to pay someone $2,000 for a sternly worded letter.
To get, oh yeah, to, you're right, yeah, to pay to get the real letter, yeah. I was going to say, some of the stuff when I'm listening to your music, I wish it was instrumental, because I love when you do the instrumental little breaks or like the sonically, and I love it as a headphone song.
So you hate my voice?
No, I'm saying I love it on headphones.
No, that's
I think there's some really, and I like that it's like it, there's these like beautiful little, like, I don't know, it's like it doesn't happen, it happens once in a song, and sometimes I love that, where it's like a little piece where I can tell that it's different and it doesn't, happen again. It wants me to listen to it again. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I wasn't saying I don't want you to sing it. Just like you're putting these moments in that makes me want to listen to it again.
That's okay. Even if you don't want to hear me sing. But I like what we're doing is more instrumental now. One thing. And another thing, just to be... Chris probably made that one moment a lot of the time. The problem with both of us, the problem why we like each other and why we are probably shouldn't be working together is we jam too much stuff in. So, you know, when we did the Dark Leaves, there were, you know, the track count was like a few hundred per song.
Wow.
And that was just unnecessary. But we're like, just one more guitar. Just one more guitar playing the same thing. And then bury it deep in the mix. Totally pointless. No one will hear that except for us. And, you know, we have done this stuff for ourselves. We made that album and many other albums in a strange, weird cabin, you know, way too isolated and... you know, way too many tracks. But it's fun.
Yeah.
You know.
Is there anything else you're happy about right now?
I really don't like this winter. So
I said happy.
Well, no, what I'm saying is I know that it'll be over. Like, unless we've entered some kind of ice age, I am excited. Like, I cannot wait. And we grew up in the cold.
We did.
We know cold better than anybody or as well as anybody.
Yeah.
And yet I have no patience for it. And so the things that I guess... Yeah, that was the wrong answer.
Why?
Anyway, I am so excited about the spring. You know, I'm excited for mud. I am excited
mud season.
For... Yeah. I don't mind falling down. I want to see some grass growing. I want to see some leaves on some trees. I cannot wait.
Yeah.
I was working on this song, and then I was freaking out because I was like, I want to get this stuff down, just this little melody down. And then there wasn't time to get down here and to row. I have a rowing machine. So I was like rowing and humming into my phone at the same time
because of this fucking interview.
Yeah, but it was exciting. it was you know, it's something no one can ever hear, but it's one of like a few thousand voice memos in my phone that I go back to and I go, what?
So you have to.
If I don't, something, yeah, I'll lose my mind. I mean, it's either, that's why I got a bike to break it up so that something else can happen, but I'm not good on the bike. I'm not a strong bicycler. I can row on a machine, and I can run, but I needed one other thing. Soon, wait, start again. You know,
yeah. Spring will be here.
You know, rolling around is going to be another activity. I can't wait for rolling around.
Anything else you want to mention?
No, I mean, I am excited about the In Dreams thing. I am excited. It is like, it's just daunting, like starting again, starting for nothing. It does feel like the beginning, because in the beginning, I never thought there would be money. There was a little money.
You just did it.
You just did it. But
there's, you know, pressure.
I'm not a teenager. it's different.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I wish you luck, man.
Well, I appreciate you having me do this too.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Did you have fun?
Of course. I mean, I'm sweating a little bit.
Why?
But, I don't know. You know, this microphone.
It's just me. I'm just a nobody. I'm a fucking nobody.
You got a nice place here. Look at the view. I love it. New York City, bright lights, big city.
I can't believe I have a job. But yeah, they pay me.
It's nice.
Yeah.
I'd love to see how that feels.